me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's IRCPC call on Tuesday, the 3rd of January. We have Eric Iaste, Barbara Steele, Michaela Nalon, James Bladel, Angie Graves, Bob Mountain, Mike O'Connor, Aubrey Doria, Matt Serlin, Chris Chaplow, Kevin Erdman. From staff, we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies today noted from Alain Béranger, Rob Golding, Paul Diaz, and Zahid Jamil. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. And if I could also please remind you to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. And apologies, it's IRTPC, not B. Thank you very much. Over to you, James and Marika.
Thank you, Gisela. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the first IRTPC teleconference of the new year. I hope everyone enjoyed their holidays and are ready to dive back into the riveting and exciting work of IRTPC. Marika sent an agenda around yesterday, and that is listed in the right-hand column of your Adobe room. Most of this call will be consumed by the presentation of the case study working group, which was led by Bob Mountain and contributed to by several others. So we'll dive into that here as soon as possible. But before that, just wanted to briefly touch on our work plan that we had laid out for aggressive one-year timeline of this PDP. And the work plan has identified a batch of teleconferences beginning today, January 3rd through March 6th, which I believe, and Marika will correct me, I'm sure, is the last available time slot for us to have a teleconference before the Costa Rica ICANN meeting. So that leaves us a block of meetings there running from today through March 6th, where we have to identify what specific deliverables we want to achieve coming out of that meeting. We have a rough outline there on the Adobe, but want to ensure that everyone is thinking of this section as a discrete unit of work that needs to be accomplished in advance of Costa Rica. So, Aubrey, go ahead. We've got a couple of folks. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And I didn't want to jump in before you had finished, so if you had more you intended to say. One of the things that I wanted to make sure, check on, is in terms of the face-to-face meeting in Costa Rica, when the date is by which we're supposed to have any documentation, agendas, et cetera, set. I know it's like 3 weeks ahead or something like that, but I don't remember. And I don't know that we need that today. One of the things I was going to suggest is that, you know, we look at the list that we've got here, see if anything else belongs in this heap of stuff, and then, you know, perhaps, you know, the three of us and perhaps others that are interested, like Mikey perhaps, and others, could then take a stab at, between now and next week's meeting, actually putting, you know, sort of bullet points in for each of the meetings, sort of saying, okay, we'll try and have this one prepped by then, et cetera. So, but one piece of information I know is missing is what our deadline is for materials for the face-to-face. I don't know that we have any, but if we do, we need to know that date, and we certainly have a deadline for the agendas, et cetera. Thanks.
Okay, Aubrey, thanks. That's a good catch. Marika, can you take that as an action item to figure out exactly which date we have to submit the agenda for our meeting and any...
This is Marika. The posting deadline for Costa Rica is the 17th of February, but that basically relates to documents that need to be that are planned to be discussed in Costa Rica. We normally get an internal schedule as well by which we need to request meetings, and that request for meetings also includes like a description of the meeting and an agenda. I haven't seen that yet, but I'll check on that, what the timing is for that. But just to note, normally that there are several steps that we need to go through to make sure internally the schedule works. So normally, as it is relatively early that that request has to be submitted, I normally complete like a more general kind of statement. You know, this is a working group meeting of this working group that's looking at these questions, and then the group would have some more time to provide additional details that they would like to add. I think the group would just need to consider whether you're looking at a more working group session for the working group itself or whether this meeting would already serve as a kind of consultation with certain other groups. I think we discussed in one of the previous meetings that possibly on the change of registrant scenario that there might be already an opportunity to discuss certain scenarios or options with the registrar stakeholder group. So that would be a different kind of meeting you're looking at, and for that you might need to give more advanced notice to those groups that you want to include or provide them with the relevant information that you want to discuss. So I guess it depends a little bit on the shape the meeting takes, and as I said, I'll check back on when we, from staff's perspective, need to fill in our request and by what time, by what date they need to be finalized.
Okay, thank you. That sounds like, it sounds like probably the 14th of February, that teleconference, we should be having a good idea of what we need to submit, specifically for document posting guidelines, deadlines. The second question I had was relative to the cutoff for constituency and stakeholder group statements, and that's coming up relatively quickly. So my question for staff would be, how much time after the close of that comment period could we expect that we would be able to go over those comments? And this is going back to Avery's question about setting up bullet points or deliverables for each specific meeting. We didn't receive a lot in the way of public comments, just one. So we don't really have a lot of substance there. So I'm looking more towards the stakeholder group and constituency statements to provide the material for that activity.
So this is Marika. I mean, today I'm not aware, I haven't seen any constituency or stakeholder group statements. The only one I'm aware of being in the process of being developed is the one by the registry stakeholder group. I don't know if others have indications that other statements are being prepared. Of course, depending on the number of comments and then the depth, it will depend on how much time it takes to prepare. But I don't foresee that. I think that we gave them as a deadline the 6th of January. So normally I should be able to have that in the typical table format in time for the next meeting. Provided that there are not too many comments and not too much substance.
Okay. Then I would propose We follow every suggestion and maybe just a couple of us on the list put together some bullet points for this block of meetings, what we wanted to achieve on specific dates, bearing in mind the document cutoff for Costa Rica for the agenda and any other materials we want to circulate, and then leaving some space at the beginning for review of those stakeholder group statements, because we really just didn't receive much in the way of public comment. And if there are no objections to that approach, then we can move on in the agenda here through to number three, which would be the presentation by Bob on the transfer case studies. Bob and others, I'm sure won't be just a solo effort, but just want to kind of keep an eye on the clock here, and if we need to spill over into the next session, then we'll definitely extend out to that. So if there's no other items to cover on the agenda, then we'll just move over to Mr. Mountain.
Great. Thanks, James. This is Bob speaking, and Marika, I don't see the arrows to control the presentation. If you could just tell me where I can see those or access those, that would be great.
They should be on the bottom part of the screen on the left side.
Oh, the
two arrows that point to the left and to the right.
Okay, great.
See those?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, great.
Okay, and in terms of getting the presentation up, do you put that up or do I put that up?
Hold on 1 second. I'm having some difficulties with Adobe. I think Gisela is trying to upload it. Gisela, it should be if you go to the shared documents, it should be on the top, basically.
Okay, just give me a second. I've only got one that comes up. Just give me a second.
Yeah, it's a big document. So.
I'm back in, so if you want me to upload it.
Yeah, if you could, that would be great.
I'll pull it up, Gisela.
Here it comes.
Here we go. Should be coming up now.
Okay, great. All right, well, so thanks, Marika, for setting that up. The thanks to the sub-team who worked on this. You can see the names there, particularly Simonetta, Chris, and Jonathan for submitting the slides and doing some editing work with me on them as well. Just a comment. This is still in draft form. We have some further redactions to do on the information that's shared. And also what we had hoped to do before we finish is to have a flowchart for each use case displayed so that we can sort of summarize what the flow is. So that will be done before the next meeting. I'm sure we'll be able to wrap those final changes up. Michele, did you have a comment?
Just one very quick one. I didn't do my homework, so I don't belong on that list. I feel vaguely guilty, but I was off actually having a life over Christmas, so I didn't actually do it.
Right. No worries. I heard you were in Paris, so hopefully you had a good time, and I certainly wouldn't be working on PowerPoint if I was in Paris. James, did you have a comment?
Also, just a very quick question. I noticed the title of this slide and other places during the slide deck that there seem to be some uses of inter-registrar and intra-registrar that are different than my understanding of those terms. So maybe when we go through, we can take a closer look and make sure that we've got them aligned consistently.
Yeah, that's a really good point. This is Bob speaking. I think it probably the appropriate title of the presentation would be examples of domain or domain transfers. And then I think we do within each use case define what the particular details are around that. The particular gaining and losing and the ownership and all that. So okay. So if there are no further questions. What I thought we'd do is start off with the first use case, which is the most detailed one. Simonetta and I worked on this together. She emailed me before the meeting saying she would be by around 10:15, so hopefully she'll join in progress. What I thought on each one of these use cases is that the person who was responsible for the specific slides could talk to that. Right? One other comment, I think as a subgroup, we wanted to redact certain information from the slides, obviously account numbers, email addresses, other things that the owners of the domains might not want to have published. The who is information, on the other hand, we thought was not necessary to redact since that information is public anyways. So if anyone disagrees with that, I'd be happy to make the changes, but that's what the team recommendation was. So moving along, all right, so I just advanced the slide. Is everyone seeing the next slide okay? I'm seeing some weird artifacts in the way the table is rendered, but at any rate, the use cases are listed there. So as you can see, we had five use cases to go through, which I think covered the range that we had discussed on previous calls. And the slide numbers where each use case starts is noted in the table as well. Use case number one, you can see the domain is bellyzilla.com, a personal favorite of mine. The losing registrar is Dynadot. If you're not familiar with Dynadot, they are a top 50 ICANN-accredited registrar, particularly popular with domainers. The gaining registrar is one you may have heard of, GoDaddy, represented by James Bodell. And we are missing a comment on this slide, but this is an example of an inter-registrar transfer with change of ownership, and we'll make that note on the final version of the deck. All right, so the first slide you can see here is a partial whois record. So you can see that the domain Bellyzilla is registered with Dynadot. It is currently locked, and that you don't see the personal information, but that domain was registered to me personally. The next slide is a sort of a, what we're doing here is sort of a hypothetical domain sale or transfer arrangement. So in the in this example, Simonetta and I came to agreement that we would transfer this domain from for myself to Simonetta. So we show the email here, which essentially represents the sale of the domain. Also, Simonetta are agreeing to return it to me, which is unnecessary, but obviously kind of her to do. So the first thing we do then is to unlock the domain. The domain was locked for transfer. So with on the Dynadot screen, we then go in and I unlock the name from the account. Dynadot has some security measures which require you to fill in further information to allow you to unlock it. Okay. And then finally asked me to confirm the unlocking of the domain, which we did. It then provides me with an auth code, which is what I need to provide to the to effectively transfer the domain from my account to Simonetta's account. So that gives me that auth code there. I then email the auth code to Simonetta and make that available to her so that she can proceed with it. And I think there are three slides, unfortunately, that have that one in. So obviously, we had some redundancy. We'll address that before the final version is done. At that point, we kick over to Simonetta. I don't see her up yet. I'll just go. Oh, you are here. Okay, great. Simonetta, do you want to take over from here and narrate through the slides that you provided?
Sure. So what I did is I logged in at GoDaddy and started the transfer process. And the first thing I have to do is basically purchase the transfer in my GoDaddy account. I'm not sure who's slide, Bill.
Just say next slide, Simonetta, and I'll advance.
Okay, next slide. I have to pay, of course, along the way. Next slide. And confirm, and then there's a little kind of like prompt on the side that kind of shows me what next steps should be, and here is where the process starts to become confusing because it's not a transfer without an ownership update at the same time, but because the two of us are involved. So if you go to the next slide. I am getting a thank you email from GoDaddy, and I'm basically a little confused because I don't know what the next steps are, because what happens as a next point in time is that the GoDaddy system is looking up the Whois record of this name and is then emailing the email address of the registrant, which is not me but Bob Mountain in this case, to continue with the transfer, and this is kind of like one of those first little hiccups in where this process as it is not really tailored towards what we're trying to do here. Next slide. So I'm solve through the FAQs and finally kind of get a little hint that probably what's happening is that Bump Mountain is receiving instructions for the next step. So on the next slide. I am getting this email from Bob that he has received from GoDaddy now, basically out of the blue, because, in this case, he knew that I was trying to transfer this domain name from Dynadot to GoDaddy, but this email could have come from basically any registrar that I'm trying to start this transfer with. So out of the blue, Bob Mountain gets an email that basically says, please continue with this domain transfer, and maybe he would be a little confused by this at this point in time. Next slide. So basically, we get on the phone, and I call that ball, and I'm like, well, I don't really know what the next steps should be. I'm kind of stuck, and then Bob goes like, yeah, I just got this email with action required from GoDaddy, and so we figured that probably he needs to give me that email so I can continue with the process. On the next slide. So after I got the email from Bob, forwarded from GoDaddy, I can continue with the process by logging back into GoDaddy and going into their transfer center. Go on to the next slide. I see now that this domain name that I purchased the transfer for is already mentioned there, and I need to put the security numbers that were emailed to Bob Mountain into my GoDaddy account to proceed. Next slide. And that's what I'm doing here. Next slide. I have to navigate through like a whole bunch of screens at GoDaddy. Next slide. To find the right place to put this in. Next slide. And then I have to confirm that I am agreeing to the terms and conditions and the registrant agreement with GoDaddy and all the rules of owning this name first, and then putting in the auth code and the security numbers that were emailed to Bob Mountain to continue transferring this domain name over into my account at GoDaddy. Next slide. This is kind of completing the process there. Next slide. So now I am getting an email from GoDaddy saying, congrats, this is proceeding, and it's prompting me to update the email address on the Whois record while this domain is at this point not really yet in my control. So it's a little confusing at this point as well. Next slide. And then Dynadot emails Bob this email basically confirming, and this is the FOA piece of it, that he really wants this to proceed, which at this point in time kind of is another little confusing point in the process, I guess, because out of the blue, Bob gets another chance to do something, although he hasn't really started the process at the GoDaddy side with starting this transfer at all. Next slide. And then finally, once Bob has confirmed with Dynadot that everything is fine, that completed the transfer, and GoDaddy emails me and says, okay, this transfer has been acknowledged, and here is your name, and this is basically done. Next slide. That shows now that the domain name has transferred over to GoDaddy, and the transfer is complete. Next slide. Bob, I guess you can take it from here.
Right. So so that was use case number one. I guess before we advance, any questions, comments, James?
Yeah, just an observation. It seems like, yeah, I agree with you. It is a confusing process, and I've been through it myself. Also, scratch my head some of the steps. And I think that the source of the confusion is that both registrars, in this case, GoDaddy and Dynadot, in this example, believe that they're not making a distinction between buyer and seller. They're treating Bob and Simonetta as if they're the same person. And I think that that's kind of at the root of what we're encountering here. So I'll wait until we have some further examples, because I think there's another example here later in your slide deck that shows a different take on that. But I think that in this particular example, that's what's going on. That's why you're receiving emails you didn't expect, Bob, as a seller, and that's why Simonetta, as a buyer, you're receiving calls to action that you can't actually do.
All right. Okay, Mikey?
Thanks, Bob. This is Mikey. I think one thing that would be neat to know in the slide deck is sort of the time intervals that are involved, because there's the 5-day requirement limit that's in there. Did all this happen pretty quickly? Did it happen with a 5-day pause? Any thoughts about time intervals? And those might go on the slide decks too, you know, just as notes on the pages. No need to go through that now, but just it would be nice to know which ones were the ones that took a long time and which didn't.
Yeah, this is Bob. Yeah, thanks, Mikey. Yeah, I think we could probably get those and add those to the slides just on the email threads. I believe that most of this stuff happened very quickly, though. I think it was within a couple of days that we were able to knock this out.
This is Mikey, just following up one thing, and that is that I did a domain transfer where the losing registrar took precisely 4.99 days to transfer the name, just
right.
Recently.
It does seem, yeah, this is Bob. It does seem to vary by registrar, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simonetta?
Well, I just wanted to kind of add to this that by no means I mean to say that this is like a problem that is particular to the registrars that have just been picked as guinea pigs for this domain transfer. My comments in terms of like this was confusing or this is where I thought wasn't actionable is just because this process is designed for the same person being involved in both ends, and it becomes clearly visible when you look at this that this is how it's set up. And that's really, I did not mean to in any way say that one of the two registrars did something that is like inappropriate or wrong. It's just, it's been set up for no more than one person is involved in the transfer process, and that's where it's breaking down. And we've seen in dealing with our buyers and sellers in the marketplace, when you have individuals who maybe purchase a domain name for the very first time in their lives, this is even more confusing to them. It's not as much of a problem when the seller is basically a professional domain trader and they kind of are used to receiving these emails out of the blue sometimes and they know what to do with these type things. But if you think about someone who's purchasing their first name ever because they want to start their website on some new name and they've discovered the right one that they would like to have and they have agreed with someone that this is what they would like to use as the name for their website, then this process is really difficult for them to handle.
Right. Yep. Thanks, Simona. This is Bob. I add myself to the queue as well in that, James, I think your comment there really cleared it up for me. That does, I believe, explain a lot of the confusion in that the emails do appear to be it would be a lot less confusing if the one person was getting all the emails as opposed to going to two different people. So any further questions on use case number one? Okay, if not, we're going to move along to use case number two. This is the same domain, Bellyzilla, where in this example, the losing and gaining registrar are one and the same, and essentially Simonetta is going to transfer it from her GoDaddy account to my GoDaddy account. So it's an intra-registrar transfer with a change of ownership. All right, so Simonetta, since you started this one, do you want to talk to the first part of this use case?
Sure, I can do that. I mean, this is basically just the whois record again, where the name is still within my control at the beginning of this process. And it doesn't show my name on Internic, but if you did the whois lookup on GoDaddy, you see that I'm currently the registrant of record on the name. Can you go to the next slide? So in order to initiate an internal account, change is what it's called at GoDaddy, and I think that's another just terminology-wise point where people can get confused because sometimes we speak about transfers, and then sometimes when you try to do this transfer within the same registrar, it's not even called a transfer. It's called an internal account change, I think, at GoDaddy or push or something like that. So I can start this within my GoDaddy account by just clicking on the name. Can you go to the next slide? And then I have to pick this little choice that says account change. Go to the next slide. Now I basically need to know who I want to have this name go to, and basically now the information of the login and email address of the buyer in this case. So Bob Mountain's GoDaddy account information. Next slide. So I'm asking him to provide this to me because that's what I need to proceed. Next slide. Bob is sending me his GoDaddy account information. Next slide. Which starts the process again. I need to enter this information into my GoDaddy account, and then I received a little piece of advice from my transfer team here at Cedo saying that I should select, use the details from the specified customer account to transfer the domain name to, because otherwise I guess the name gets stuck in the process. I haven't tried the other route, so I don't know what would happen. Next slide. Again, I have to agree to the terms and conditions of this change. And basically on Bob's behalf, also agree that the name will be locked for 60 days when I do this. But Bob doesn't really get to agree to this at this point in time yet, but I think he gets to do this at some later point on his end as well. Next slide. There's just an upsell opportunity in here. Next slide. And then it basically informs me that this is now complete. Next slide. I am seeing that it is currently changing accounts in my GoDaddy account. Next slide. And I get a confirmation email from GoDaddy that basically tells me, congrats, this has worked, and it gives me a 15-day opportunity to go back to GoDaddy to probably tell them that, oh, I didn't mean to do this, which I just found interesting from a point of view of this is like a new timing in there, that it's not the 5 days that we see with registrar transfers. It's just, I don't know why it's been picked at 15 days, but for whatever reason, I get this option to undo, I guess. I also haven't tried acting on it, but and I don't know what would happen once you click that, but I just thought it was interesting that there is some kind of safeguard built into the system that let's say someone did this without my consent, out of a sudden me as a registrant would still get this email that basically gives me an opportunity to reach back out to GoDaddy and tell them that, no, I didn't mean to have this domain name leave my account. Next slide. I guess, Bob, you can take it from here because this is what happened to you.
Right, yeah. So from my end, then I get an email from GoDaddy informing me that there's a transfer in progress and asking me to take action to continue the transfer process. So I log into my GoDaddy account, and as instructed, I click on pending account changes to continue the transfer. It then shows me that I have an incoming domain, Bellyzilla, and I need to select that domain, which I do. It then asks me to confirm to continue the domain transfer process, confirm terms and conditions, and also that there is a 60-day lock. And then I click, then it informs me that the my changes have been submitted and to confirm that. So then if I go back to the to my account, it shows the domain in my account, but you can see the status says changing accounts, which informs me that it's moving from one GoDaddy account to another into mine. I then subsequently receive an email that the domain is, the transfer is complete. And I believe this slide, Samantha, was the email that you received informing that the domain was moved, right?
I think it is, yeah. So maybe this is in the wrong order here.
I think it's correct because I received confirmation that I had it, and I think you subsequently received confirmation that the transfer was successful out of your account. So I think this was one of the last.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I got this email twice. And basically another opportunity here informing me of the 15 days to get in touch with GoDaddy to say, oh, that wasn't what I wanted to do.
Right. Okay. And I neglected to put a who is screenshot as the last part of this use case. I'll do that before we get the final final version. James, you had a comment?
Hi, yeah, thanks. So just wanted to touch on a couple of points here. We were talking about the 15 days and some of the other some of the other terms and conditions. Wanted to emphasize that this type of a transaction, the transfer between accounts within a registrar, is not defined, and we would prefer to keep it undefined in terms of ICANN. This is an internal process or service that's, that we and a number of other registrars offer, that we have tailored the service, I think, to what we believe is valuable to our customers. We don't charge for it, but I suppose we could, or we certainly wouldn't want to see any restrictions on that. So I'm just putting this out that this is not a ICANN-sanctioned function. This is something where registrars are innovating and coming up with their own market differentiating services to provide this this facility. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, James. Mikey?
Thanks, Bob. This is Mikey. I just want to note something that I pounded into the chat, and that is that one of the things I ran into is the first time I did an internal transfer within GoDaddy and realized that I had to give the buyer, let's see, which way did it go? Bob had to give Simonetta, so Bob was the buyer. The buyer has to give up their account credentials in GoDaddy to the seller. And that made me cranky the first time I ran into it. And so the solution that I came to was that I set up a dummy account that sits in between me and the buyer and the seller. And then I set the credentials for that account specifically for that transaction and hand those credentials over and then pull the domain out of that account into mine. Because otherwise, I'm giving up the credentials to an account that holds unbelievably valuable names to somebody that I don't really, then they can go ahead and do all kinds of stuff. So there's a security issue there that is unique to GoDaddy. It's unique to each registrar. And again, this is another drawback to trying to use a process that's designed to do one thing to do another. And so I just wanted to get that little drawback on the record. I don't want to pick on GoDaddy. I'm sure that this happens elsewhere. But that example went by, and I just wanted to highlight that. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey. It's a great point. Simonetta, you're next.
Well, I mean, I wanted to kind of touch on this one and then share another observation. I mean, I honestly, Mikey, when I saw that, I thought, oh, my God, for the most part, probably if you know someone's login name to their GoDaddy account and you know the email address that they're using, it's usually those two go together. So basically you get a lot of information for doing a ton of mischief. So, and again, as you said, this is not to pick on GoDaddy. It's just something that I noticed going along the way, and I'm sure others either do stuff that might be even more risky or found a more elegant solution. I don't think in this case it is because it's designed to be for the same person necessarily, because it does imply account change, which kind of is more like an owner update intent. But I guess when the process was designed, it drew heavily on what was there before, which was always designed to revolve around a transfer with the same person. So I think it was just borrowed from something that you shouldn't have borrowed from. And then this way to get it done is just probably a technically easy way to do it, and therefore it was implemented that way, and it wasn't necessarily done this way because someone from a security compliance background would have liked the process to be designed that way. So it's just I had the same reaction to this, Mikey, when I first saw this. I was like, well, Bob has to really trust me to give me this piece of information, because if I really wanted to do mischief with this, I would have some very good data points right there. But then the second observation I had on this whole process is, you can see it also just by counting the number of slides. It was much, much easier to do this transfer with N1 entity than the transfer between two different registrars. And I think that is because, obviously, if you do a transfer with N1 registrar, that registrar has control over both sides of the process, and it fits together a little better than the process fit together when the domain name transferred from Dynadot to GoDaddy or any other combination of registrars, I'm sure, because every registrar has their own way to do this. The combinations of how this is done can become really confusing and really difficult to navigate. So I think the takeaway point here is it's just a fact that domain name transfers are working differently from registrar to registrar. And even within a registrar, there's probably as many different solutions to the problem as there are registrars. And I'm not saying that ICANN needs to govern how it's actually done, but it is a fact that because everyone does their own version of this and everyone uses their own words for things, I think some things might help along. For example, at least having a best practice guideline that suggests to keep naming consistent, so that not one registrar calls the inter-registrar transfer a change of account, and the next person calls it a transfer, and the next person calls it an owner update, and I don't know what other creative solutions people may have come up with. I think just things like that might be a good idea to suggest to the community to keep consistent.
Okay. Thanks, Samantha. James, you're next.
Sorry, I was on mute. Thanks, Samantha, and those are excellent points. I think just wanted to emphasize, first of all, we deliberately avoided calling this process a transfer to avoid confusion. So, you know, while we may benefit by having some industry standard terminology, I think that calling it a different flavor of a transfer, I think, might work against that goal of eliminating confusion. Secondly, you know, I think that registrars, you're correct, registrars are more comfortable with this particular process in you know, where they control both sides of the transaction, or better yet, a better description would say where the domain is transacting but not leaving their management, because then if something goes wrong with the transaction, they have the power to investigate. They have the power to correct any errors or chase down any hijackings or any you know, failure to deliver type scenarios. So I think that those are you're correct in saying that they're more comfortable in this type of arrangement. You know, I think it's hard to say whether or not this would be a beneficial system to copy at other registrars, only because other registrars may have wildly different mechanisms for managing domain names. For example, they may not allow you to change the registrant name at all in order to create or to transact a domain name. You may have to create a completely separate account at a separate registrar or within that same registrar and transact it there. So it's a really strange thing, and we have to probably as a group decide in our recommendations how far we want ICANN's you know, heavy hand to reach into these types of customer service processes, and that's something I think that we'll hopefully discuss as over the coming weeks.
Okay, great. Thanks, James. Michaela?
James is much more diplomatic than I'm going to be.
Why is that not a surprise?
Because James is really diplomatic and I'm not. Look, I understand where Simonette is coming from, but this is something that at the moment is something that lies completely within the purview of the registrar. And this is an area where each company can offer a different service, a different type of solution, and do things in their own way. Because, I mean, following this through to a logical conclusion, then a Spanish-speaking registrar or an Italian-speaking registrar or a German-speaking registrar would have to start referring to the process using English terms, if you want to follow it through to a completely logical and stupid conclusion. And I don't think that's the way that things should go. I mean, some companies only offer domain registration, some companies only deal with corporates, some companies only deal with domainers. We all have different business models, we all have different pricing models. So, I mean, I think that, you know, trying to force us all to handle an internal customer service account type thing in a uniform manner isn't the right thing to do at all. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Michele. Just a time check. So we have right now 10:49. We have three more use cases to go through, and I have an absolute hard stop at 11 Eastern time. So I guess I'll defer to James and Marika. Should we continue and cover what we can, or should we defer the next use cases to next week's session?
Can you get through one more, or is it just too...
Let's see. Use case three is fairly almost 15 slides or so. Okay.
Yeah, maybe we should put a bookmark here then, because we don't want to blow through that and then miss something, especially when we're talking about the contrast.
Okay. Great. That's okay. Great. I think that's great, James. I'll turn the chair back over to you.
Okay, thanks, Bob, and I really appreciate the work that you and Simonetta have done, and I think in the upcoming slides a number of other individuals contribute their experiences and their observations as well, so really appreciate that. And I think that this is, as we had hoped, this is spurring some good conversations, which is, I think, starting to peel back some of the diplomatic niceties that Michele always accuses me of having. And getting into some of the meat and potatoes that Mikey has identified some security issues that we're identifying, that, you know, is there a limit to what ICANN's role should be in smothering the different businesses' approach to servicing their customers. You know, we all want standardized terminology, but then that opens language issues. And then, you know, from our perspective, you know, we want to make sure that that the processes and procedures like transfers are being implemented the way that we thought they would be when we come up with policies like the inter-registrar transfer policy, and then it turns into, well, we're trying to use this for transacting domain names, and it sort of kind of works sometimes. And I think that, you know, all of these things are hitting on all of the core issues that we're trying to uncover in this working group. So but I think that the demonstration is definitely serving its purpose in that regard. So then the next item, and it's very brief here on the agenda, would be to confirm our next meeting, which would be 1 week from today. I personally will be traveling during that time, so while I may be able to attend, I certainly wouldn't be comfortable moderating the discussion. So I've asked our co-chair, Aubrey, if that is something she can work on. And then, Aubrey, is that does that fit with your schedule? I know that you have a conflict every other Tuesday.
Right. I think I'm fine. I think I got my conflict moved a half hour earlier, so I should be okay.
Okay. If you need any help in that regard, like I said, I will try to be here. Otherwise, we can perhaps ask Marika to...
I should be fine. The folks I'm working with that had the conflicting meeting did agree to move it a half hour earlier, and it's supposedly a half hour meeting. So it goes longer. I'll just leave it.
Okay. Thank you. So then we will plan for you to moderate the discussion next week for our call on January 10th.
Okay.
Simonetta, you had a question?
No, I was just wondering if you could capture the comments on the in the chat box, because I think there were some good points being made there.
Excellent suggestion. Gisela and Marika, can you ensure that we capture those and post them to the list or to the wiki?
Yes, I'll do so.
Okay, thank you. I don't know who came first, Bob or Mikey. Let's go with Bob.
Okay, yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob. I just to confirm, though, so before the next meeting, I'll update the master deck and upload that to the Dropbox, so and I'll circulate it with the team as well for review. So we should have that done before the next meeting. And if anyone has any comments that we didn't capture today, feel free to email me off list, and I'm happy to incorporate them as well.
Okay, thanks, Bob. And does everyone have access to that Dropbox, or is it just the members of the sub-team, or is that...
I think it's just the members of the sub-team. I'm happy to give the broader group access to it, though, if they wanted to take a look at the presentation.
Well, I was thinking that if you're at a point where you're ready to share that, I mean, if you're still doing some work and removing some personal information, then definitely keep that to a smaller circle. Because once it goes on the wiki, I think we should consider it part of the public record.
Yeah, this is Bob. When we finish the redaction, I'll then add the entire work group to the Dropbox, so anyone who wants to look at it will be able to do so at that point. So we should be able to get that done, I'd say within a day or two I'll have the redactions done.
Okay, excellent. Thanks. Mikey?
This is Mikey. The conversation's kind of moved on. I was just going to read into the record some of the conversation in the chat. That's, you know, one of the things that you might want to do is just publish, get into the habit of publishing the chat to the email list. It's the conversation's moved beyond. Thanks.
Mikey, I think that's an excellent idea, and it's something that we adopted early on with the AOC groups. It was just kind of our part of our routine to publish the chats to the mailing list, at the end of each session. Okay, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I normally keep a copy of all the chats we have, and it's more in the cases where, indeed, there was substantive discussion that, you know, we forwarded to the mailing list, and as in certain cases, there's just more chatter. You know, I keep a record of it, but those I typically don't, you know, distribute not to overload the mailing list, but I'm happy to make a practice of forwarding every chat transcript after the call.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Unless it's, you know, consists entirely of McKelly sharing cat pictures, we should probably distribute that. Okay, well, with that, I'm sorry, what was that?
He's moved on to baby pictures. His wife had a baby over Christmas, so now he's gone from sharing pictures of cats to pictures of babies. Baby's feet in particular.
Okay.
So he's now being referred to as the former cat person by me.
Okay, fair enough. So just to confirm then, that next meeting we will allocate once again the bulk of the discussion to those remaining three use cases. And that we will, or so the remaining use cases beginning with number three, and that we will leave a little bit of time at the end to discuss the sort of more housekeeping type issues as well as the work plan. Are there any closing thoughts, Rika?
Sorry, left overhand.
Okay. All right, well, with that, then, we'll adjourn just a couple minutes early, and thank you very much for everyone for attending this week. Hopefully getting back into the swing of things after your holidays goes very smoothly for you. And we'll speak to everyone next week.
Great. Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.